When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Let's get petty. Pettycast on Tuesday. We got all the crumbs from over the weekend where people got salty about things. And we're going to get salty right along with them. Our pettiness shows through. Yeah.
We encourage everybody to let your petty flag fly. Don't try to be a good human being.
Not during this segment. Yeah, not during. Yeah. And text in. 5-Hour Energy fan line as we head into the 8 o'clock hour here. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. If you're petty about something, someone said, hopefully George Pickens made this episode of the Pettycast. He did not. That was all the way back on Thursday. We might have even played some of that George Pickens. He did not, but let's start off. Another wide receiver made it. And I predicted this one before the season when he was drafted by the New York Giants.
Yes, that's right.
This is not going to go well with Malik Neighbors and Daniel Jones in New York.
He was throwing shade at Daniel Jones before he'd even arrived in New Jersey.
From jump. And so I feel good. I don't get a lot of them right. This one I got right.
Yeah.
Here was Malik Neighbors after the Giants just awful, awful loss to the Bucs. They got run off the field in New York by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 30-7. And once again, Malik Neighbors not targeted early in the game. Didn't get targets till the game was way out of reach. He did not like it. He was petty AF.
Go out there first, second quarter. Don't get the ball. Start getting targets at the end. I mean, can't do nothing. Start getting the ball when it's 30-0. What you want me to do?
Why in the first half are they not looking at you?
I don't know. Talk to Dave about that. Talk to Dave.
Did you say something to the coaches at halftime?
I mean, they know. They come up to me, ask me what plays I want. That was that. I mean, I don't know, man.
He is chomping.
Is he chewing gum?
He's chomping on that gum, dude. He was chomping.
That's extra degrading.
Yes.
When somebody's putting you down and they're chewing gum.
I mean, just you can hear. You know, he is. He's chewing. You look at the video. He's working on that gum. And if it sounded muffled or you don't know who he's referring to, Dabes is Brian Daboll, the head coach of the Giants and the play caller for the Giants.
It's curious because, you know, with a rookie wide receiver, you always wonder, all right, is he running his routes correctly and everything? For whatever it's worth, his PFF grades are great on the receiving side of things. But so you always wonder with rookies, sometimes it's because you're not actually running the offense as crisply as you deserve. Figure out a way to get Malik Neighbors involved, okay?
Yes.
You're at a point in your team's development this year where whatever he can do, lean into it a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah. Get him his touches early on.
Oh,
the Giants are just a flaming mess. Yep. I hope Man, I hope Joe Shane doesn't get fired, the GM. I hope he doesn't get fired in the offseason because it'll be so much fun. We'll have to have we could have a weekly Giants petty cast and just play nothing but sports radio callers from New York.
Yeah, they've got to be beside themselves right now. Here was Rex Ryan actually talking about the Giants being a dumpster fire.
When you let Daniel Jones walk out with, we're not going to play because we don't want him to get hurt. We know you're our best quarterback, but, you know, we don't want you to get hurt because we don't be stuck with that money and all that stuff. Great message you sent to the locker room. You got exactly what you deserve. That team looked like they had no energy, no juice. And why? You gave up on them. Don't tell me the players gave up on you. You gave up on them when you made this move. It's such a ridiculous thing. This isn't one game left in the season. There's seven games left. So you know what? It's not, by the way, it's not Daniel Jones' fault that you gave him $40 million. It's not. Okay? And it's not his fault that you didn't assign Saquon Barkley. It's your damn fault.
Okay, so Rex is talking about the fact that not only they cut Daniel Jones, but they jumped Tommy DeVito, the third stringer, over Drew Lock, the second stringer at quarterback.
Yeah.
Because Drew Lock might hit some incentives that would trigger some money that he would get. Is what people believe. Yeah.
It becomes, and it's complicated because look, yes, there are some financial considerations that make a whole lot of sense for cutting Daniel Jones now. But yes, that's true. They wouldn't have been an issue if he'd been playing consistently, right? They wouldn't be having this. So the financial concerns accelerated the process, but it doesn't excuse the fact that Daniel Jones just simply hasn't been playing well. Mm-hmm. So I don't buy into the whole, like, what kind of message are you sending to the locker? Daniel Jones could have sent a message with good play that he didn't need to get cut.
That's right.
You know, so it's, the Giants got themselves into this situation. Yeah. They got him, Joe Shane spent the entire offseason on HBO talking about how the guy he had just given a huge contract, they need to figure out whether he's actually a good quarterback or not.
What they have in him, yeah.
The damage is already done. That was already clear. Yep. They put out an advertisement to their own players all offseason long that they didn't trust Daniel Jones or believe in him.
Yep.
And yet they had already paid him. The damage is done. We're complaining now about... It's like we're whining about the guy eating too many sausages after he's already been diagnosed with colon cancer.
That's right.
Okay, right. He should have made some different decisions earlier in life, okay?
Yes. Yeah. All right, so we're in the middle of the petty cast here, as you can tell. I'm going to go to this one right now because it ties in. This happened in the Giants' loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Not sure how many people saw this, but Baker Mayfield scored a touchdown on a short run, probably about a 10 or 15 yard run. It goes hurtling into the end zone, pops up, and starts giving the Tommy DeVito, like, hey, you know, the hand thing he does, like, what's the matter you? Like, the touching the thumbs to, like, the two middle fingers on both hands, you know, like the...
Like an emphatic, it looks like the Johnny Manziel cash grab. That's what I thought it was at first.
Yeah, but it's...
But it was actually the, it was more of an Italian thing.
Yeah, an Italian thing. Hey,
what's this marinara?
Which unto itself is petty. You're making fun of the other...
A lot of Italian Americans that might not have liked that.
Right. Yeah. So it looks like you're making fun of it, but then Baker Mayfield was asked about it in the post game. Listen to how into the line of questioning this reporter is about Baker Mayfield doing the Tommy DeVito celebration.
You start off with a kind of a whirling derby leap there in the end zone, and then I guess it was the DeVito celebration. Is that
tribute to Tommy? Yeah, he's a good dude. He's got swag.
Yeah, who came up with that?
Oh, I have no idea. I just see him do it.
No, but whose idea was it for you to do that? And when did you know you were going to do it?
Most of the times I don't know what I'm going to do, so there's spontaneous stuff.
That was just spontaneous? That was not planned? I mean, even your teammates got into it, too.
Yeah, you know, New York fans love Tommy here and give him something they like.
Are you Italian by any chance or no?
I haven't done a 23andMe, but I don't know.
I mean, that was a funny answer, the 23andMe. That was like a deposition. Was that a lawyer in there? Like, she was peppering him with questions.
Jenna Lane, I think her name is.
Okay.
She covers the Titans, or the Bucks.
The Bucks. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Was that planned? Was it? You know your teammates were doing it.
Where are we on Baker Mayfield right now? Baker Mayfield has a great capacity with me on whether I either enjoy his churlishness or I think it's the sign of everything that's wrong with this generation. I feel I'm enjoying it.
I used to hate Baker Mayfield. I was so happy for his downfall in Cleveland. I like Baker Mayfield a lot. This Tampa Bay version of he's been humbled. This Tampa Bay version of Baker Mayfield, who has been overall humbled, but still has moments like doing the Tommy DeVito celebration, thumbs up. I'm in favor of this version of Baker Mayfield.
Hey, Ben, can we play the initial question again? I just want to hear whether what this writer, man who makes his living writing words down, what I want to hear his exact phrasing again.
This is petty.
Finish that off with a kind of a whirling derby leap there in the end zone, and then
okay, that's it. Yeah, whirling derby. It's whirling dervish.
It's a
you
dervish.
Clown.
It's a
what yeah, the
it's
hell a kind of writer are you?
Yeah, that's who, I need to know who that guy is. We need his name. Whirling dervish.
Whirling derby. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that is a common phrase. Yeah,
we'll look it up. All right, Jeffrey Simmons, Tennessee Titans All-Pro defensive tackle who did what we expected, ruined the interior of the Texans' offensive line, right?
I'm just laughing at myself, who routinely screws up a word at least once an hour.
Hey, man, that's okay.
Criticizing a verbal professional.
Take your shots. He screwed up. Yes. It's dervish. Point it out, man. So it's a petty cast. You're petty about it. It's good. Here was Jeffrey.
I said Jose Urquidy earlier when I meant Luis Montero, Luis Garcia.
Luis Garcia, yeah. Why don't we do Jeffrey
Montero.
Simmons here? How's that? We'll do Jeffrey
Moving
Simmons.
On.
Yep. Jeffrey Simmons talking about closing the game out against the Texans. Of course, that's what they did. They forced a safety at the end of the game. But the part at the end, win one for Amy.
It felt good, man. Going out there and, you know, we always talk about as a defense, be closers. And that's what we did. We closed the game and, you know, we made the plays when we needed to. You know, we get pissed off and when things, you know, it's the NFL, things don't go well. You know, maybe like the fumble on special team or big kickoff return, whatever it may be, you know, as a defense, you just got to go put the fire out. You know, that's what we did, even on a fumble. Like, you know, you go out there and put the fire, you respond. And that's what we talk about as a defense, you know. Whatever happened on the other side of the ball, it don't matter. You know, go out there and, you know, play all the style of defense. And, you know, we have a lot to clean up, but, man, this feel good. You know, not just for us, for Miss Amy. You know, we know the history behind everything. And just to see her in this locker room, you know, with tears in her eyes, you know, how much this means to her. Now, that's the reason why, you know, we, especially myself, like, go out there and give them all. You know, we had a mindset last night. We talked about it. You know, let this game mean a little more and play for our owner.
Why is this in the petty cast, Sean?
Win one for Amy Adams, just because I'm wondering how maybe the Texans are processing this win over the Titans. There might not be a more petty head-to-head going on right now at an executive level, at an ownership level, than Amy Adams Strunk versus Hannah McNair.
I don't like the – I thought the petty cast was to be petty about other people, like, outwardly. I don't want to feel the pettiness, Sean. I don't want to have it directed towards me.
I got you.
And Amy Adams Strunk, you know, who plays the petty game real hard.
Yeah.
I don't want to – you know, prop up her pettiness.
Yeah, well, I mean, she had tears in her eyes, Seth, in that locker room. I mean, she had been... This has been a rough stretch for the Titans against the Tech. I see what you're saying.
We know that there's no need. Okay, so this needs to be a prelude to a petty cast after the next Titans game where you go into Nashville and turn Will Levis into a pumpkin.
Yes,
okay?
Yes.
All right, I'll only accept this entry into the petty cast. Is you know, Jeffrey Simmons was one of two interior defensive linemen that just absolutely destroyed the Texans' offensive line.
Yeah.
I would say, I mean, the Tennessee Titans' defense and their physicality was so far above and beyond the realm of anything the Texans can offer right now.
So
that
bad.
It was, I mean, they just smacked them down. They
yep.
got beat. You don't flush that immediately.
Nope.
They got their butts physically whooped
yep.
by a much more physical, much more blue collar. I'll call it H-Town blue collar. They're
go.
More H-Town blue collar than the Texans offense.
Good call. Text message, 5-Hour Energy fan line. My wife is a Titans fan. Talk about petty. She left a jar of Hellman's on top of my truck. That's pretty good.
Do we have to boycott Hellman's? Is that the cause I'm all of a sudden going to care about?
I hope not.
As I've ignored every single plea to boycott any company at all, I ignore all of them.
I might have to
engage it for Hellman's.
I ain't boycotting mayonnaise, man. I like my mayo.
There's other brands.
There are. I just like, yeah, that's true. I like my Hellman's.
I'll go store brand, damn it.
You ain't scared.
I'm not going to support Hellman's when I could be supporting HEB.
All right, I have pettiness from a former Houston Texan. Let's start with this. This is not the former Houston Texan you're about to hear from. This is Sean Payton on the safety position for the Denver Broncos. He was on, it looks like he was on some in-house media there in Denver, and they moved on from Justin Simmons and Kareem Jackson this offseason. Mm-hmm. Their last season they did. Remember, they cut Kareem and he became a Texan. But Sean Payton had moved on from both of those guys, and they promoted P.J. Locke and free agent Brandon Jones, and they've done a good job, according to Payton, at safety. They've been a big upgrade over last year's safeties.
We're better overall on the back end at that position than we were a year ago. And we've played a few different guys back there. But I like how we're playing. We're communicating. Our guys on defense, Vance and Jim Leonard and all those guys are doing a fantastic job. But we're definitely, I would say, further along and it was a good performance by those guys yesterday.
All right, so Kareem Jackson, one of the safeties that was upgraded from, according to Sean Payton right there,
two-time Houston Texan,
retweeted this audio that we just heard from Sean Payton, and with crying, rolling on the floor, laughing emoji, says, "If it's one thing I've learned in this league after being in it for 15 years, some of these coaches will say any damn thing, even if it's them putting their foot in their mouth, LOL. Shout out PJ and B. Jones because I love what they're doing this year. Keep going, fellas."
Yeah, I think that's on Kareem's part. I can see where he's coming from. It's like what we've talked about before. It's like it's possible to give a compliment without throwing shade at somebody else.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Kareem meant it exactly this way. This is what I would say about Payton. It's the kind of thing a coach throws out there where, frankly, yes, they are a better passing defense this year. I don't know about the individual safeties themselves versus those guys last year, whatever.
It's a good defense,
You can give them a compliment without also throwing shade on guys who were good players for you. Mm-hmm. You don't have to always go there, Sean Payton. But what are you going to do? Like, the fact of the matter is, yeah, they're performing very well as a defense this year.
You think Kareem found that audio himself, or you think someone sent that to him?
I think somebody totally sent it to him.
Yeah.
I just, Kareem's going to throw his opinions out there about it. I'm guessing it's not going to prove anything to any current Broncos fans. I don't think Broncos fans are going to, they're going to side with Sean Payton. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's the way things work.
Yeah.
But, Payton, I don't know. He's operated pretty well in life, operating the way he operates.
Dude,
that's how it's going to be.
That's, I was thinking about this last night, watching that Chargers and Ravens game.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, the AFC West, when it comes to just the head coaching matchups, the Raiders are screwed. You've got Jim Harbaugh, Sean Payton, and Sean Payton's been very good in Denver. I was skeptical that he was just cashing checks. He's done a really good job with Bo Nix. He's done a good job with that defense. You got Andy Reid, Jim Harbaugh, and Sean Payton in the same division. Those are some heavyweights, man. Like that is the Raiders are effed. They're who do you hire? You know what I mean?
You hire Deion Sanders, man.
That would be fun.
I think Deion is the perfect guy. You look at, okay, you got to find the right coach. This is something Bill O'Brien has talked about in interviews. And like Bill O'Brien says some really, really smart things.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those is about just finding the right fit for, there's lots of really good head coaches. Not every city is a fit for them.
Right.
Or not every organization is a fit for them. The Raiders come with certain challenges in dealing and handling ownership. The mystique of the Raiders can be as much a curse as a blessing, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think Deion might be the guy who's most perfectly suited to balance all of that.
Yeah.
And, strictly selfishly, just to watch and see how it unfolds, I really hope Deion takes an NFL job.
I do too, man. Like, once Shadur and Travis Hunter are gone from Colorado, then it's just... It's a garden variety Big 12 team that, it's fun having Deion there, I guess. I'm with you on that. That would be awesome. That would be so fun.
Yeah, and I know, I don't think people are even bothering. For a long time, people would say, no, Deion has said he doesn't want to coach in the NFL. I think now he has said in a meeting with his AD in the room that basically everybody's got a price. One of two things. He's either going to have a big raise next year at Colorado, or he's going to be on an NFL team.
No,
is that
question.
A pretty safe either or? It's one or the other. He's either going to be coaching in the NFL or he's going to have a huge raise at Colorado. 100%.
There is no choice C. It'll be one of those two things.
He's making $5 million a year right now in Colorado. The NFL going rate for Deion, I'm guessing is going to be 10 plus million.
The only thing I would give like a 2% chance of happening, and the reason it's so low is because they just extended Mike Norvell in Florida State. But that's Deion's alma mater. You know, like I could see, like if Florida State got,
oh yeah,
gave him a huge bag to repair his alma mater, you know, I could see that being enticing to him.
I don't know if that, I doubt Deion cares about this. There is something about the pressure of coaching at your alma mater that you got to consider it. You know, you got to know that the lows, it just, there's a lot of extra baggage that comes with it. So, but regardless of that.
Expert on a podcast summed up the CJ Stroud situation, I hope perfectly. I think this is the best case scenario for CJ Stroud's struggles of late. We'll have that for you coming up next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Dana Carvey and David Spade here.
You might know our podcast, Fly on the Wall, featuring guests from across the entertainment industry.
We decided to do a spinoff called Superfly, and it's fun. It's just two of us riffing on current events, pop culture, catching up, impressions.
Joe, Trump's trying to be a dictator.
Yeah, it's a bump on the tater tots.
Joe, no.
Listen to and follow Superfly on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Derek Klassen is he's part of the Athletic Football Podcast, at QB Class on Twitter. And this little bit of audio popped across my timeline. And I'm hoping this is an optimistic view that you're about to hear on the struggles that CJ Stroud is going through right now. To me, this is like a best case scenario. And so I'm hoping that this is an accurate assessment of things. We'll hear from Chris Long a little later in the show. We played him earlier. He's got some concerns. Chris Long, former defensive lineman, about C.J. Stroud. That's a huge topic right now around the league is what are the Texans going to be down the stretch here and can they fix things on offense? Here is Derek Klassen on C.J. Stroud kind of pressing right now.
I'm still not really worried about C.J. Stroud. I do think there is an element to it where I think last year got away with a lot because things were just working really well. The offense, the skill players for the most part were a little bit healthier. And I think the run game was helping a little bit more where it didn't feel quite as disjointed. And I think he was just like, oh, I can just do whatever I want. And I can make all these throws. I think right now you can feel he is like taking on a little bit the pressure of the offense where it's like, oh, all these things are going wrong. I feel a burden to make a play. And this is actually something I wanted to talk about with some other quarterbacks and some other offensive environments. You know, an offensive environment is good when the quarterback isn't worried that a bad play is going to happen. He's just like, you know what? It's fine. We'll get to the next one. And that doesn't even mean the offense is good, right? Like, look at Drake May in New England. That's not a good offense, but you can see in the way that he plays, he's like, I don't need to be worried if a bad play is going to happen. I can get to 2nd and 10. We'll go figure something out. CJ Stroud is just not playing that way right now. He feels like he's got to make the next play constantly. And I think that's a little bit of the issue. So long term, I don't think it's going to kill him. I think he'll be okay. I think he'll come out of it. But like for right now, for the rest of the season, I am a little bit worried that that's probably going to stick around.
Yeah, it feels like he's pressing constantly right now.
Your thoughts, Seth? Do you agree with that assessment of CJ?
Yeah, I think that's a very good read on it. It's that, and it's not an excuse for CJ. It's something that I think CJ would take accountability for. But I think there's times where he's consciously trying to make the smart decision and holding off on pulling the trigger on some plays that he otherwise would have normally made. But there is also a part of him that, he doesn't look like he's stepping into his throws even when he's not under pressure at times. I don't know if he can drive the ball downfield the same way he could last year. including, you know, the throw to Nico that, you know, Nico had to slow down for a little bit. When he hesitated to pull the trigger a couple weeks ago with Tank Dell in the end zone, and that ended up being an interception versus the Lions. I wonder if he just either doesn't trust his own ability or there's some kind of injury issue or something going on where there's multiple factors at play, but something ain't right. Like, something just ain't operating the way that we used to watch him operate. Now, part of it, too, is I don't think Bobby Slowick provides him with easy answers to the test often enough. I don't think the short game, I don't think the hot routes, I don't think the crossers over the middle, all of those things, I don't think that it's being dialed up for him as well as it could be. So that, again, all comes back to, all right, how is Bobby Slowick operating this offense? Mm-hmm. Why are there so many things that aren't working? At the end of the day, you've got way too many players who are underperforming based on their previous performances, whether it's quarterback or not, that it's impossible not to just wonder, all right, would it be different with somebody else running the whole operation? When you get up week after week and say execution is the issue, Sean, what have I been saying since week one? Yeah, execution is on the offensive coordinator.
Absolutely.
That's ultimately, yes, whether it's play calling or execution. If you got to divide it up into those two buckets, it's on the offensive coordinator. And right now, very few people are executing properly on that team. And it just, whether it's quarterback or not, it's impossible to, there's so many things that aren't functioning properly that it's impossible to just narrow it down to something that isn't related to something else. It's one big death spiral.
What do you think the chances are that a change gets made during the bye week?
2%.
You think they just stick with this and they're rolling?
Yeah, I think that D'Amico is wired to see the upside and the positivity in things, which is great. There is a time, and this is why you have a GM, and this is why you have a head coach. Ideally, those should be two people that the coach, yeah, it's awesome that he's loyal to his guys. It's awesome that he sees the best in people and their upside. You got to have that personality that's somewhere on the spectrum, basically, with your GM, where you can separate all the human stuff, separate the positivity from the negativity, everything else like that, and just look at it objectively. And it might be a really difficult conversation and discussion that Caserio and D'Amico have during the bye week. And maybe they've already said, like, look, we can't do this right now. Wish the bye week was earlier, but we're going to table this discussion for the day after the Jaguars.
Till the bye week, yeah. We had somebody suggest on the 5-Hour Energy fan line, could you see, it was interesting the way the text was phrased, and I've lost it here amidst the sea of text that we've gotten here, but it was something to the effect of, could you see Nick bringing in Josh McDaniels to be the OC for this team? And I thought it was interesting, the phraseology of it, that it would be, reading into that, the texter seems to be phrasing it in a way where Nick is bringing his guy in to be D'Amico's offensive coordinator.
I know. I think there's just way too much potential baggage there. And with all due respect to Josh McDaniels, who seems to be, he's an offensive coordinator, pure and true. He's not meant to be a head coach, but there are a lot of guys like that who are really good offensive coordinators.
Yeah.
I don't. If he did that, it would not be in the middle of the season.
No. I think they were asking after the season's over. Yeah.
I think you would still go with, and I think D'Amico would feel this way, I think he really likes the Shanahan system, the Kubiak-Shanahan system.
Yeah.
And when executed properly, no can defend. It is the crane kick.
It is the crane kick.
It's just really, really hard when that offense is well executed, and you've got the right people in place. It's really hard for defenses to go get. And like I say that as a defensive player who's played against those schemes, going back to Mike Shanahan, it's true. When it's well executed, you just feel like, ah, crap.
Yeah.
Even when you're doing the right thing, you're doing the wrong thing. And that's not the way this offense is operating right now.
Do you subscribe to the theory that the league is catching up to it a little bit? That so many teams run it, that teams may be struggling running it? Because I know San Francisco's had injury issues, but they've been struggling. You know, Shanahan himself has been struggling with it. I hate to use the Texans as a template for an example that there's struggle going on league-wide. I feel like the Texans' struggles are independent of the system. They're just not well coached.
I guess let's see. The most notable guys would be Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Matt LaFleur Mike McDaniel.
Yep.
I think it's a more of a matter of, like, it's like anything else. When more and more people start using something, then, yeah, chances are it's not going to stay. Yeah. It gets adopted. There's elements of it and all of that that it dilutes it a little bit.
Yeah.
I think at the core of it, it's still it's still resoundingly successful, and it's a matter of having the right people doing it and the right guys calling the plays.
Yeah, it's text message. Bobby looks like he has no backbone, like he gets bullied a lot and just does nothing. He has a hard time holding people accountable. Are we back to where we were in the open of the show where Bobby's got his hoodie with the long sleeves on, and is it the arcade? Is that where we are?
Well, I think one thing that comes along with it, though, too, and this is something that's this is not just a grumpy old man take. This is very real, I think. I think there's a lot of young coaches that feel this way. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of whiteboard geniuses. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been this way forever in football. It's just pick your flavor of which offense is popular at the time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of whiteboard geniuses out there. There's a lot of guys that are really good at scheming stuff up and everything. But like Bum Phillips said, coaching isn't about what you know. It's about what you can get your guys to do.
Mm.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, you can be... And this is why we see this in life, you know, in any organization, there's usually some super smart, the IT people, probably the smartest people in your organization, but they're not necessarily the best people at actually implementing all of their ideas, right? It's a different skill set. And I think Slowik might be on that whiteboard warrior side of things where I think he's probably got he's got a brilliant mind in a lot of ways, but actually getting the guys to do the things you want them to do, that's coaching.
That's coaching and teaching. That's what that is.
You know, it's the difference between theory, like an economics professor versus an actual CEO.
Yep.
The economics professor, most economics professors know this. Like, yeah, I'm really freaking smart and I know a lot about business, but I'm not the guy to run a business.
Yeah.
And is Bobby an economics professor more so than a CEO?
That's a great analogy. He did come from Pro Football Focus back in the day, right?
Right.
Wheatstraw texts in, what does all this do for Gerard Johnson? I guess meaning all the potential churn maybe, or just is the offense being poor right now? Obviously, Bobby Slowik's star has been drastically impacted by this. At least I think it has. Who knows? Maybe when the coaching cycle pops up, Bobby's back and getting interviews and whatnot. He still has 5 games to fix this thing.
He's a very good... I can see just from his press conferences, I know that he's going to... like he did this last year. There are very positive reports about the way he interviewed.
Yeah.
I think if he gets interviews this offseason, it'll be more of an exploratory variety. It's going to be teams that are like, okay, this guy's got something to him. We don't know what it is. We're not ready right now, but we want to have it. So I predict that Bobby Slowik will get 4 head coaching interviews, but none of them will actually be serious.
I'll take the
They're
under.
Going to be. It's going to be doing advanced scouting on Bobby Slowik for a future date.
Okay. I take the under on that right now, 4. But Gerard Johnson, does Gerard get negatively impacted by what's going on with it? I mean, Gerard was getting interviews for offensive coordinator jobs last year. You know,
does the QB
coach get dragged down into this sludge right now?
Yeah, I think it probably does.
It can't be positive, right?
He'll get fewer interviews than you would have thought he would.
Yeah. It can't be positive.
Okay, no, I've got a grudge match against you, the over-under. Because I specifically said they won't be real interviews. They're going to be exploratory interviews with Bobby Slowik.
Okay.
And teams are...
How are we going to know that they're exploratory versus real? You know, like...
You just had over-under on the number. So, on the number of head coach interviews.
Oh, okay, okay.
So, I don't ultimately care whether they're exploratory or not. Does he actually interview?
Okay, I see what you're saying. Like,
teams are taking their time these days with hiring coaches.
They are.
They're interviewing 10 different people, you know. So, I think he gets some interviews.
Okay, grudge match. Okay, so you put the number 4. I'm taking the under right now.
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, I like this. A show bet. Good. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. D'Amico Ryans is taking one of his rules, tearing it up, and throwing it out the window. We will let you hear from his coach's show what that is coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, 24-hour rule. You flush it after you get done losing, winning, whatever the case may be, you move on. John Harris and Mark Vandermeer asked D'Amico Ryans about that last night on his coach's show because that one stung. on Sunday, man, losing to the Titans at home, losing to the 2-8 Titans, and the way you lost with all the mistakes. They asked that. How tough is it to apply the 24-hour rule to a loss like the one on Sunday?
Oh, this is extremely tough, and I'm not letting this one go. This this will be a week-long one that I make sure we all remember. And so, man, we gotta change. We gotta play better. Right. So this one is gonna sit with me all week until we get the opportunity to go out and compete again versus the Jaguars. So I want this to sit. I want this to sting all week for our guys, and I want everybody to feel. I know that's how I'm gonna be feeling all week until we were able to go and change it.
Yeah.
Okay, so he did say change at the end. He caught himself there. It was weird. He caught himself about to saying change and then said play better. Ben, play it just one more time. I'll tell you when to down key.
Oh, this is extremely tough, and I'm not letting this one go. This this will be a week-long one that I make sure we all remember. And so, man, we gotta change. We got to play better. So this
We got to change. We got to play better. Why didn't you say change?
Some stuff.
Yeah. Why didn't you say it there, Coach? Why didn't you say it there?
And again, it's a multifold problem offensively. What do you change, and how much can you change it? If you like, we were talking earlier about the Kubiak Shanahan system, and like some of the things that drive it. For one, I think wide receivers who can block. That's a big part of it. And you know, they've got wide receivers who are all wholly committed to trying to block, but they don't necessarily have it. Nico Collins is the only guy who's built like Debo Samuel. You know, like you've only got one guy that you really trust to seal the perimeter on an outside zone run, all those kinds of things. And I don't know how much you do about that. Hey, George Kittle, do we have a tight end who can block like George Kittle? No, of course we do not. Not even close. But there are also times where, God, that first screen was so frustrating, where the guy who would eventually make the tackle on that screen, Dalton Schultz, is staring back at the quarterback, just waiting to see if the ball comes out or not, and then he turns around and decides to block. How much of that do I put on Bobby Slowick versus Dalton Schultz? Yeah, I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue. It's bad. It's really, really bad right now. I mean, and it's getting worse. It's getting worse. So I don't know what the answers are. I know that the biggest thing you can do that could make the biggest difference is change the offensive coordinator. I mean, it's just you've run out. You didn't go out and get an interior offensive lineman in the offseason or at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
And left guard has been a problem all year long, and it remains a problem.
Yep.
You know, is Laramie Tunsil all of a sudden going to be a road grading, blue collar run blocker? God, no. We know that's not going to happen. But you can't change a lot of that. You can't change your tight ends right now, but you can change the offensive coordinator.
5 Hour Energy fan line, text message. This season is like going to two games. It's fun and exciting in the first half, and then it's frustrating and disappointing in the second half. Not looking forward to 3 losses in 10 days with the Dolphins, the Chiefs, and the Ravens. It really is like going to two games. I mean, their point differential first half, and I've never seen anything like this second half thing with a team with talent. You know what I mean? Like
it's got to get to the point now where I just wait. It's not like I'm going to go do the research myself. I wait for it to pop up on my timeline. But the historical ineptitude in the second half compared to the first half, I mean, going into a couple weeks ago, they were pretty much, they'd scored almost the exact same number of points in the first. The scoring differential in the first half was almost the exact opposite of how they score in the second half.
That's right.
They were like plus 70 points in the first half versus minus 70 in the second half. We're veering towards, I'm guessing, unprecedented territory in that regard.
Gotta be. I mean, yes, certainly for the franchise. I've never seen a Texans team like this before. Hell, Bill O'Brien was almost the opposite. You know, Bill O'Brien he closed things out in the second half of the game. You know, remember we had that when Bill O'Brien was leading 37-4 when he leads at halftime of these games?
It's like the positive thing you didn't want to accept because it never feels good in the moment. The strategy of holding on to a lead in the second half, it never feels good in the moment as a fan.
Yeah.
And yet, over time, it does make sense. You know, it's frustrating. But yeah, O'Brien probably never got the credit he should have gotten for that.
You brought this up with Ross when we had him on before. We had Ross Tucker on in the 7 o'clock hour. He was on the call for the Texans and the Titans. And you brought this up multiple times, just how, like, how improbable is it that a team that sacks the quarterback 8 times, you know, Ross brought up the fact, not only sacked him 8 times, you scored in 18 seconds into the game, You're up 7-0. You had a pick six in the game. Mike Sando of The Athletic went and did the research on this. Since 1960, the Sunday game between the Texans and the Titans was the 36th time that a quarterback has taken 8 sacks and thrown a pick six in the same game. 36 yeah. times it's happened since 1960. Fun fact, Will Levis is the only two-timer on the list. He did.
Oh, my God.
It happened in week 3. He was sacked 8 times and threw a pick six. Now, they lost that game 30-14 yeah. to the Green Bay Packers. The record for quarterbacks, I hate this stuff right now. The Texans are doing so many things that are statistically almost impossible. The record for quarterbacks who have been sacked 8 times and thrown a pick six in the same game, 3-33. In those 36 Ooh. Games. And
so the Texans are a part of that.
They are, yeah, they're part of the that, three, yeah.
One of only 3 victories in that time. Since what year?
1960.
Oh, my God.
1960. It's happened 36 times where a quarterback has thrown a pick six in a game. He's been sacked 8 times, and only 3 times since 1960, since the Kennedy administration.
it always teams. Comes back to Kennedy for you, Sean. Yeah, it's like, yeah, I know. And him and Abraham Lincoln had the same this and that, whatever. All right, Sean, can we let it go? All right, with your incessant incessant conspiracy theories about John F. Kennedy.
My own subtle political pettycast going on yeah. right now, right? 3-33, though, man. How about that? Yeah, and like, you know.
I'm kind of surprised that it's only happened 36 times
I am
since
too.
1960.
I was too. Yeah. I was too. That's not that many for, you know.
Six is relatively rare, though, so yeah. you add that onto it.
In the same game with 8 sacks,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
7 in the first half. I didn't get to see the Manning cast last night. I was out at Legacy Cigars and Lounge. Shout out to them. We had a great time. Steak night, Monday Night Football. Get there. It's in Stafford on Main Street. So I didn't get to see the Manning cast last night, but I guess Mike Vrabel was a guest on the Manning cast last night. Good job by Vrabes, starting to get his name out there. You know, that's how you do it. You get on the Manning cast and you look smart and say funny things. He told an anecdote about Urban Meyer, and I guess during one of the Jaguar Titans games in the 1 year that Urban Meyer was in the NFL as a head coach,
yeah.
he walked up to Mike Vrabel and said, "Do I know you?" Here's how the story went.
You know, Urban Meyer asked him, "Do I know you?" And Urban Meyer was coaching the Titans. He was coaching the Jaguars, and he actually said the same thing to me. I said, "Yeah, I'm the head coach for the Titans, and I worked for you for 2 years."
He worked for Urban Meyer as an assistant at Ohio State for 2 years, and Urban Meyer walked up to him and said, "Do I know you?" Do you think he was serious? Or do you think Urban Meyer was joking when he said that?
I think the way Vrabel told it, I think he was serious.
I do too.
This is one thing I would advise people to try to. This is a good tactic to take through life sometimes. I think sometimes when people have extreme success, you have a tendency to obviously look at the things they do really well. Sometimes there's a tendency to think that, oh, if this person's extremely successful, everything they do must be really top notch. When in fact it's the opposite. A lot of times people have extreme success, like if you have that much talent concentrated in one part of your brain, it has to draw and take away from other parts of your brain. Mm-hmm. So sometimes those super effective people, they have huge deficits in their normal functioning. So you should never try to be exactly like that person. Just recognize, okay, they do some things really well, but because of that, they're going to have some serious deficits elsewhere. The biggest mistake people make is when they try to emulate everything some whack job eccentric rich person does. Yeah. Like, you know, try to emulate the good things, but also recognize. So with Urban Meyer, I think it's clear he's got some deficits in the way he operates yes. interpersonally. And yet, yes. incredibly effective as a college football coach.
College head coach, yeah.
I think that it's probably part of one of his little quirks, that maybe he's got face blindness or something, or he just kind of, you know, Nick Saban separates a lot of the... You lose out on a lot of the interpersonal stuff to get a Nick Saban. You can only have so many good things about you.
He didn't meet him at a wedding shower or a baby shower.
I know.
He coached for him for 2 years.
It's extreme, Sean. That's extreme. How it's like Jim Harbaugh. Like, Jim Harbaugh is brilliant in so many ways, but then there's other parts of him. You're like, this guy's a lunatic.
He's a lunatic.
If you try to emulate Jim Harbaugh completely, you're going to look like an actual lunatic because you don't have the same your positives are different than Jim Harbaugh's positives.
That's fair.
You know?
Yep.
So you gotta get, if you wanna get away with it, this is why Bill Belichick has ruined so many head coaching careers. Cause you get all these yahoos that think they gotta act just like Bill Belichick without understanding and realizing, like, no, not everything Belichick does is actually good.
Yeah.
It's just that he's so brilliant in the things that he does do well that he gets away with some of the deficits. Don't try to emulate the whole damn shebang. And likewise with Urban Meyer. And God, don't let one of your colleagues grind on you in front of a camera.
No.
Don't do that either. That's not one of the keys to success.
It's not.
For college football coaching.
Not for that job, it's not. Maybe for other jobs it is. We'll do the power ranking of the power rankings, see where the Texans fall. Are the Texans still in the upper half of teams in the league in the eyes of the experts? We will take a look at the power rankings coming up next. A reminder, Texans and Kroger hosting a Thanksgiving meal pickup for fans this holiday season. Houstonians have the opportunity to pick up a turkey and sides today starting at 10 a.m. John Lopez and Reggie Atatula are going to be broadcasting on site at the Texans radio pregame stage. That's where Seth and I do that pregame show, just on the southeast side of the stadium. Texans players and Figgy Fig will be distributing the 1,000 meals at the Kroger Gate while supplies last. So get on out there to NRG Stadium today. And we look forward to talking to the guys in Crosstalk when they join us in about an hour. Stay there. Power Ranking of the Power Rankings is next.